From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, a change at the top for Illinois Republicans, and the Pritzker administration's plan for two state prisons runs into some opposition. We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Hannah Meisel, a reporter for Capital News Illinois. Hannah, it's always good to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me.
So as we get ready to start this show, as we sat down to record, some breaking news came down from the U.S. Supreme Court. And the court today, on Friday, upholding a federal law that makes it illegal for those who have domestic violence restraining orders against them from possessing guns. Now, why this applies even more to Illinois at this point is because there's been a piece of legislation floating around that has not gotten through the General Assembly at this point. Hannah, this has been called Karina's Bill. Tell us what this bill is aimed at doing, and does this court decision have some impact on it?
Right. It's named for a young mother who was slain by her, former partner. I believe it was last summer. Really tragic case. Also, a teenage daughter, I believe, was slain. Her younger son was spared, still injured. This is a bill that folks who are working to protect domestic violence victims, folks who are working to, get gun control measures where they can, have, worked at dual interests in. But the bill, even though, especially before veto session last year, there was a lot of thinking that it really could pass, but ultimately wasn't called, didn't really go anywhere this spring either. Part of the reason was, people were kind of waiting on this decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. Because, of course, if we pass this in Illinois and then the court ruled against it or struck it down, there would kind of be no point. But, there's other factors at play. Karina's bill would create kind of a guidelines rules to take away firearms from people who have a domestic violence restraining order against them. This is kind of a complicated process. You don't always get them. Domestic violence restraining order is also, different from other types of restraining orders. And some of the arguments that it would be too hard, that the Illinois State Police and local law enforcement are not set up to communicate in this way. Other arguments that it'd be dangerous to send law enforcement agents into a situation that could get volatile when they're supposed to take away someone's guns within a certain period of time after that domestic violence restraining order has been issued.
So, Charlie, this, as Hannah mentioned, was one of the hangups of getting this passed, was waiting for the Supreme Court to decide, but it wasn't the only one. There has been opposition, or at least what I would consider to be concerns about the law, or concerns about this bill from law enforcement.
Yeah, and as Hannah mentioned, one of the concerns was under the terms of the bill as it stands now, once this order of protection is entered, the bill requires that the police within 4 days remove guns from the individual against whom the order has been entered. And in the spring session, the Illinois Associated Chiefs of Police raised some questions about that. John Milner, who's the group's director of government relations, said, for example, that the 4-day window might be too tight, too burdensome for smaller departments in rural areas. He said you need to have at least 4 officers to execute the search, and it may be difficult getting it lined up because, as Hannah said, it's really dangerous. You can't just knock on the door and say, "Hey, Mr. Wheeler, give me your guns." Because oftentimes these folks are violent and you could wind up with some kind of a shootout. So you really do need the police to be very well protected. But on the other hand, Milner also said that these concerns could easily be addressed And he said the Police Chiefs Association really liked the legislation and what it aims to accomplish in terms of disarming folks who pose a threat to their significant others. And in fact, in the case of Karina Gonzalez and her 15-year-old daughter, Daniela, they were shot and killed in their home in Little Village by Karina's husband. And the court had ordered her husband to stay away from Karina and her family. And his firearm owner's ID card was confiscated, according to the news stories at the time, but his firearms were not. So on July 3rd, he shot and killed his wife and daughter. So my guess is that now that the Supreme Court has cleared the way, the U.S. Supreme Court has cleared the way for this kind of legislation, that will be one of the items that will be addressed and passed in the fall veto session.
We'll watch for that. But right now, let me turn to some political news that has occurred this week. Don Tracy, he's an attorney from Springfield, and he also ran for political office before at the statewide level. And his family is owners of what is known as Dot Foods. It's a big food redistribution company based in Western Illinois. He's also been, though, the Illinois Republican Party chair for over 3 years, the first downstate person to hold that title in 3 decades. Well, this week he sent out a scathing letter announcing he's going to resign. He blamed party infighting as the main reason. And Hannah, I guess not a shock because he has had anything but a smooth ride in this position.
No, not really a surprise. Don Tracy has been party chair since February of 2021. He survived a vote of no confidence already last spring, but you know, the one election cycle that he did, he was kind of at the helm at in 2022, not a good election cycle for Republicans in Illinois. And, you know, we're now in the middle of an election cycle and you'd think that you would want stability, but more and more the Illinois Republican Party State Central Committee, those who have gotten on that kind of steering committee, they're more and more in the mold of the MAGA Republican Donald Trump acolytes. Very different from what the Illinois Republican Party has historically been, but, you know, try as they might, the kind of old guard Republicans, they tried to hold off the Washingtonization of the Republican Party in this state, but, you know, eventually they couldn't. And so Don Tracy, like I said, narrowly elected back in February 2021. He came in, of course, on the heels of the 2020 election, January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. You know, wanted to unite the party. I thought it was very interesting that, you know, it was the hardliners who were pushing for new leadership after Tim Schneider, who held the party chair position for 6 years, back in December 2020, said, okay, I'm going to step away. We're going to find someone new. He, you know, had survived another previous coup. And, you know, he was someone who was handpicked by former Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. So I thought it was interesting that the hardliners, they wanted someone else, but what they got in Don Tracy was kind of the same thing. Don Tracy, also a Rauner ally, more in the mold of a libertarian. Maybe he believed, you know, more in some of these principles that these hardliner conservatives believed in too. But at the end of the day, he's a member of what you would call the donor class, and you know, kind of a more genteel sort of person. And then the 2022 election, the Republican Party did not back, you know, Darren Bailey from the start, and you know, really just kind of a messy election there. A lot of people not wanting to step outside their box, and you know, also the fact that Don Tracy back in 2002, he ran as a Democrat for state Senate, and a lot of Republican hardliners, you know, we are all about the purity tests these days in politics, and you know, for them, that was just one more piece of evidence that this guy was, you know, never gonna take the Republican Party in the direction that these hardliners who, again, are now mostly, you know, they're getting more control of the party and the state central committee, the direction that they want to see the party go, the direction that, you know, the party has gone nationally and in a lot of states.
Yeah, Charlie, fundraising is always a key with this type of position. Don Tracy comes into a situation that honestly has to be really difficult in the state of Illinois. There are people and many people who want to support Republicans in this state, but some of the direction the party has gone in a blue state like Illinois has not necessarily proved very successful. So really a difficult job here for somebody like him.
Yeah, it is. His background was not in grassroots organizing. He was a businessman and an attorney. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe he and his family and his and Dot Foods probably are the largest contributors to the state Republican Party as an organization. And the difficulty he came in was the fact that the Republican Party has transformed itself, from my perspective, from being a party of fiscal conservatism, social moderation, into being a cult for Donald Trump. And that makes it hard to get people elected in the suburbs. Now, I could be mistaken here, but I believe there's only one state legislator who has a legislative district that includes any of Cook County. And the change in the party has turned off a lot of folks who were, back in the day when I was an active reporter, were your traditional Republicans. So, and I've said this before, someone like Jim Thompson could not win a Republican primary. Jim Edgar, no chance. It's this appeal to, I guess, this kind of populism and this antagonistic air that Donald Trump projects that is making it hard for the Republicans outside of some of the rural areas in downstate Illinois to really have much of an impact on the state. There were some comments that were interesting. One of them that I thought was interesting was State Senator Dan McConkie of Hawthorne Woods, who was the former Republican leader in the state Senate, commented in an article that appeared in the Daily Herald. He said, "It's unfortunate that you have a circular firing squad that seems to be the Republican Party these days. We should be focusing attention on the Democratic Party and what its continued failures have been." And so that was a recognition by a Republican leader that, hey, maybe we need to kind of unite and stop being against and start being for something. One of the people who are in the running to replace him is a Palatine Republican who ran for lieutenant governor unsuccessfully a couple of years ago, named Aaron Del Mar. And he said that moving forward, if my peers believe in me and give me the opportunity to lead this party, the Democrats better be ready. I'm no milk with toast, he said. the fighting is going to continue. And I'm not sure that this attitude and this downstate thing, as a matter of fact, you mentioned Darren Bailey, who was the unsuccessful Democratic Republican candidate for governor in 2022. He was praising Tracy's pending resignation in a social media post. And he said, and this is his quote, and Hannah, I think this may have been in your story, "The problem that Don, Mark Shaw, who was forced out of a leadership position, and many others simply don't comprehend and refuse to understand is that they simply are failing to uphold the party platform. They believe that supporting liberal candidates who will work closely with Democrats is the answer. It's not," Bailey said. "Fake Republicans got us into this mess. Real Republicans standing firm will get us out." And I'm thinking to myself, that's the kind of thing that will guarantee that the Republican Party is sort of an afterthought in the state of Illinois for a long time to come.
Yeah,
when I was a reporter, there were people who we in the press corps disrespectfully used to refer to them as whack jobs. And you knew they were there and that was okay. And they got up and did their thing, but they weren't part of the process. They weren't actively working to pass sensible legislation, and you kind of ignored them.
Well, Hannah, the Democratic Party, and I found this kind of humorous too, put out a statement, said that they are unified, and they pointed to chaos among Republicans. Of course, Democrats have had their own share of divisions. We've seen that play out even within the party organization as well. But the thing that gets me on this one here is to raise money to be really successful, you have to win offices usually. I mean, that's the key thing. And so I think Tracy, I remember him posting about trying to get people registered to vote by mail. That was something that a lot of Republicans don't want to do. And he was kind of pushing toward that. I think he understood, it seemed, that success of the ballot box is going to lead to better things for Republicans up and down the entire state. But like Charlie said, there's some who don't want to go that route. They don't want to do something that they view is against what their party credentials say.
No, I mean, absolutely. I think that the pragmatism has left the building. Listen, there's also Democrats, I would say, that are not concerned with governing. But, you know, we're talking about the state of Illinois, where Republicans hold super minorities in both the House and the Senate. They don't have a single statewide constitutional officer. Only two of the state's seven Illinois Supreme Court seats. So, you know, they're just not really interested in governing. They're more interested in winning a war of rhetoric, winning this culture war. But, you know, the more that they shout into the wind, you know, shout into their own base, you know, the base is getting angrier and angrier. But it's not like they're winning, you know, elections. It's not like they're winning more people to their side. We've talked about many times on the show before, there's really not much such thing as a swing voter really anymore. There certainly are people who consider themselves independent, but it's more that people are politically disengaged. And so sure, like, you know, angry rhetoric will get people more engaged and more excited. We certainly saw that in 2016, where Donald Trump activated these previously, you know, kind of non-voters. But yes, you're right. You know, they're not winning elections because they want to stick to this purity test. And, you know, they don't want to work with Democrats who, to be fair, completely, you know, shut out Republicans from the process these days, you know, partially because they don't have to work with Republicans because in the House and Senate, their numbers are just so large, but also because the Democrats, by and large, in Illinois now in these last few election cycles, we've elected a lot more progressives. And, you know, they really have no interest in working with Republicans. So the two sides have no use for each other.
And I would just say, too, that and we'll talk more about this down the road as we find out, you know, who takes over for Don Tracy. But I think that some of that dissension among many people who consider themselves Republican in the state and are very upset with the state and upset with Democrats, a lot of that comes from failures in the Republican Party to have more representation. Because if you can get more representation, you can be at the table, you can sit down, you can compromise, you can work out a lot more deals, and I think people feel a lot more represented. So I think that's a lot of the problem, too, that we're seeing, especially in many what you would consider downstate communities. But let me move on, because we do have a couple other topics I want to mention. Hannah, I'll go back to you. This was a case involving Darren Bailey. We just mentioned him, former Republican gubernatorial nominee, and Dan Proft, who has also run for governor in the past, and his name gets thrown into a lot of different circles. But there was a case before the State Board of Elections that has now been resolved. What was the case about and what was the decision?
That's right. In the 2022 campaign cycle, the Democratic Party of Illinois executive director filed this complaint with the Board of Elections and alleged that Darren Bailey and conservative political operative, longtime radio host Dan Proft had illegally coordinated for the general election. It alleged that his appearing on Proft's radio show and then this series of ads that Proft cut with his independent expenditure committee, people who plays by the rules pack, that, you know, they illegally coordinated because they coordinated on messaging. You know, this case has kind of dragged on. It was last week that a hearing officer, his decision was made public ahead of the meeting for the Board of Elections this week. And the hearing officer basically said, you should probably just dismiss this case. You know, among other things, Illinois law is just not clear on what independent expenditure tax can and can't do. You know, everything that the Democratic Party had allege that its complaint was kind of based on federal law, but federal law is just not an issue here. Board of Elections doesn't have any jurisdiction over that. So the Board of Elections met this week and, you know, kind of finalized that. And vast majority of things the hearing officer recommended, they approved. And I did think it was interesting, though, that the hearing officer had recommended that either the Board of Elections or General Assembly adopt rules or, you know, clarify state law on independent expenditures. And the vice chair of the Board of Elections herself, a former Republican state senator, said, yeah, we're definitely just not going to do that. You know, where it's up to us to interpret the laws, but if a change is going to come, it's going to come somewhere other than that. It's going to come from the General Assembly.
Hmm. And Shirley, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, what I thought was interesting, as Hannah suggested, the notion from the hearing officer was, look, we need some clarification here. And both of, or a couple of the attorneys that were involved, an attorney for the Democrats named Ed Mullen, who testified in front of the board, he said afterwards that he encouraged the board to look further and give some guidance. And he also said, I've spoken to legislators about this as well, to clarify this so that we can make sure that our clients know what the law is and follow the law. And then the attorney for Darren Bailey, Jeffrey Meyer, called it problematic that candidates, committees, and attorneys don't have a clear direction to follow. But as you said, Laura Kent Donahue said, it's not our job, and she's the co-chair of the board. So I guess we'll have to see whether in the fall session or maybe next spring, the legislature takes it up.
I mentioned at the start of the show that Governor J.B. Pritzker, of course, his plan, it's been out there for a while now, to change a couple of state prisons. It would create new facilities for Stateville and the Logan Correctional Facility, a women's prison in central Illinois. The change here would be that Stateville and Logan would be located pretty much right near each other in the Joliet area. Logan would close in Logan County near Lincoln and be moved up there. That has caused a lot of consternation for the union, for people in the Logan County community who fear the economic loss of that. Hannah, you attended some rallies, also attended a what was at least scheduled to be a state hearing on this at the Capitol. What in the end has happened with this? Is this project still moving forward?
It's definitely still moving forward, but we have no more clarity on what the plan will actually entail. You know, these prisons are in disrepair. A report that was commissioned by the Department of Corrections last summer revealed we've already know, especially great reporting from former WBEZ reporter Shannon Heffernan. You know, she has done a great deal of work exposing just the awful conditions within Illinois prisons and their failings on prison health care. We have all kinds of consent decrees that apparently are just not doing anything to move this forward. And so back in March, the governor announced that it was going to close and rebuild these prisons. But, you know, especially when it comes to Logan Prison up in Lincoln, question remains whether it will reopen at its current spot and with all of those jobs, or if it'll be co-located with Stateville on those grounds up in a Crest Hill near Joliet. We still don't really have any clarity on that. Like you said, there was a pair of hearings last week. This is part of a process outlined by the State Facilities Closures Act that the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability has, it's optional when it comes to certain types of facilities, but they elected to hold these hearings in the local communities to, take the temperature. Lots of AFSCME members, whose members are employees of the prison, especially in Logan, showed up to these hearings. And community members, in Lincoln especially, Lincoln has lost two private colleges in the last 4 years. And so for them to lose this big state facility and all those jobs, it would be pretty economically devastating The governor, of course, had said earlier this spring, he said, you know, it's not really a good economic plan to rely on a state prison. I think that really upset a lot of people. And then on Friday, like you said, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, they were supposed to hold this advisory vote, but only 3 of the 12 members even showed up. There wasn't a quorum to vote. And I looked back, you know, the 20 years, I should say, the Facility Closures Act was initially passed as a rebuke to then Governor Rod Blagojevich. You know, in the 20 years since, the CAGFA has had almost 36 of these advisory votes. The governor doesn't always do what they want, CAGFA recommends, but still, to just not have a vote, it's not the best look.
All right, well, we're running out of time, so let's go to our notes from the field. Charlie, let's start with you this week.
Well, earlier this week, the governor, Governor Pritzker, and the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, which is sort of the agency charged with promoting Illinois' business community, said that we had another record-breaking year in 2023 with export sales of more than $78.7 billion. And according to rankings from the U.S. Department of Commerce, they had the highest number of sales of any state in the Midwest, and we rank 5th in the nation. And the governor was saying, and here's a quote from governor, Illinois is once again recognized as a leader in global exports. As the 5th largest exporting state in the nation, our $78.7 billion in international sales support countless jobs across the state, a sign of a thriving economy. Interestingly enough, the most of our exports went to Canada, $20.8 billion worth, and Mexico was $12.9. And on the other hand, we also imported like 2.5 times as much as we sold overseas, $225 billion roughly imported, with most of it coming from Canada, China, and Mexico. So we are up there, but we're probably not doing as much as we need to develop our stuff here in the States.
All right. And Hannah.
Well, the Secretary of State announced this week that the Martin Luther King Jr. statue that had for years been outside of the Capitol across the street, across 2nd Street, that was vandalized in 2022 and had to come down. That it has been restored and will be replaced sometime this summer. In a story in 2022, when I was still working with NPR Illinois, I described the statue as weirdly diminutive and extremely weathered. Truly was. Former Secretary of State Jesse White, who of course knew and worked with Martin Luther King as a young man, had wanted to replace the statue, and he even pledged $5,000 toward a new one. But it seems that it's instead been restored, and maybe in the future, a brand new Martin Luther King statue might be located somewhere within the Capitol.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Hannah Meisel with Capital News Illinois. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.